frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
The preacher man says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a going dry. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see. My woman and the kids and the dogs and me. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch cats fish from dusk till dawn. We make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do. We grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Cause you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Cause we're the more boys raised on shotguns. We say grace, we say ma'am. If you ain't into that, we don't give a damn. We came from the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. We can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. Grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a business man. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway nights, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land.
and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
Okay, and we're live. So, sorry about that rough start there, folks. It's modern technology for you. You get either love it or hate it or leave it or something like that. I don't know what that phrase was. But either way, it's enough to drive you drinking whenever you can't get your doggone act together.
I think it's you can either love it or sneeze on it.
Yeah, well, I done sneezed on that one. And you got to watch out which buttons you're pushing, too, because you're liable to turn the wrong thing off, which I've done.
All the buttons look alike.
Man, I can hear you washing your hands. This is like, this is live.
Actually, I was washing off a canister that had some sticky food on it.
Everybody, that was Thomas washing off a canister that had some sticky food on it.
Be glad it wasn't me flushing the toilet.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, that's, duct tape and baling wire here at www.shazizradio.com. That's how we keep this thing going. Posted some links over there in the chat room over there. One of them, Thomas Kim, takes I believe it's a blender motor and turns it into a generator. And then, doggone, I can't remember the dude's name again. I hate it when that happens.
He wrangles cows?
No, I'm just going to have to click on this link right here so I can get the right name. Then I got to hurry up and hit the doggone stop button on the video. Sky Collection, that's the one. He does a video on inductive coupling. And I'm not going to go into a big explanation of what that is right now, but basically... He's doing a lot of different research over there that you really ought to check out. And he does speak in Spanish, but he puts little subtitles on there, so you have to be aware of that before you go over there.
Snail putters?
Yeah, I love watching his videos. I mean, he does some really good work. He works with a lot of different pancake coils and neodymium magnets and stuff. Anyway, I also posted a link over there for a Google search for redline generators. Now, if you go back and you look at one of my older videos called Electron 1 and Electron 2 and Joyride, it's basically what I used on there for part of the generating system on there. These are the ones that I have are 12 volts to 120 volts AC at 500 watts apiece, and I got two of those on the old Electron motorcycle, the old all-electric self-charging motorcycle there, and that's the one that's running the 36 volt floor buffer motor. Also has a generator off of a Volkswagen. Anyway. There's another video out there, but I can't. I didn't post the link in there. So the guy didn't really do a very good job as far as he should do a how-to video, but you can't see nothing he's doing really because he's kind of like at a table and he's just telling you what he's doing, but you can't really see it, so it's not really that good of a video as far as I'm concerned. But the concept's good. He takes some brushless motors and turns them into a combination motor generator. So while you're running your fan, you're actually charging a motor, charging a battery, if you understand what I'm trying to say here. And it looks like Stephen Gibbons posted a couple links and some videos in there as well. So there, if you want to see any of these links that we're talking about, jump over there to www.shazizradio.com/superchat.html or jump over there to the Wake Radio chat room. That's the super chat room. You get to talk to both of them at the same time. Man, my mind is scrambled there, Thomas. You still there? Breaker 19 for a radio check.
No.
Anyway. Those redline generators are pretty interesting. They would be good in a worst case scenario kind of deal. Now, keep in mind, you can get AC in burgers. And they change the AC to DC, basically, yeah. And that's what these redline generators do. They use these redline generators on, like, telephone trucks and power companies, so for the big lighting systems that they have out there when they're on scene and they have to have a lot of light. So basically, you hook it up to your car, and whenever you need some light, you plug something into it, and it only runs when you plug something into it. When there's a load on it, it's the only time these things will run. So if you ain't got nothing plugged into it, it won't start. So I guess that's a plus. Anyway, I posted a link over there in the chat room about a where in the heck's the chat room now? There it is. yeah, this is terrible radio. Alright, now
pretty sure it's where you left it.
Yeah. I got like 10,000 windows popped up. That's really good for... Okay, there it is right there. It's a one of these guys that does prepper. He's got a slightly different version of this red line generator that I'm talking about. But it still does the same thing, but apparently his is 1,600 watts. These red line generators, they're not cheap. They're pretty doggone expensive, but... they'd be well worth the price as far as I'm concerned. It's already ready-built generator. If you had a solar panel hooked up to a battery bank, you could either run inverters or you could run this thing right here. And I'm thinking the plus about running one of these red line generators is inverters tend to get a little warm after you put them under a load. This has kind of got its own built-in fan inside there that keeps everything cool, if you understand what I'm trying to say here. Apparently there's one on eBay for $130.
Mm.
Yeah, usually they're pretty doggone expensive. They can go up to as high as $2,580 and higher. So they're not really cheap, but if you ever find them in the like swap meets or flea markets or something like that, or garage sales, cheap, then you should pick them up because they're pretty neat. They're not really well known. A lot of people don't even know they even exist. But essentially, you're taking a 12-volt motor, turning it into a 120-volt generator. So the reason why I'm pointing these things out is because I still believe that because we use our energy so inefficiently, that it is possible to build a motor generator, electric motor generator, that, like, let's take the fan one for example. You're actually using the fan, but at the same time that you're using the fan, you're charging batteries with it. And so basically, I guess what people would think I'm trying to get at is that, you know, you get the thing to run itself. Not necessarily the case of what I'm talking about. Basically, you know, usually you don't get something for nothing. That's just as simple as that. Because the way that we're using electricity is so super inefficient, we waste more energy than we actually use. Now, the point I was trying to get at is you're going to be using the fan anyway, and so if you can take that while that fan's running and charge up a totally separate battery bank, not the one you're running the fan off of, but charge up a totally separate battery bank, then you're at least recapturing some of what you've used so far. You see what I mean?
Mm.
Yeah. So, the best case scenario is that you learn a different, completely different way to use electricity. You're not going to use it in the old energy hog method that you've been using it up to date, you know, like it. Oh man, where's the words I'm looking for? Anyway, basically,
they're hovering around just outside your hair. They're flying around like flies.
Yeah, well,
those aren't flies. Stop shooing them away.
I'm like scatterbrained or rattlebrained today because of all the different changes in the system that you know, we got going on here with the server. You know, the hard drive went down, and then I had to get all these IP addresses and everything resorted and get everything back in line, and then for the DJs to be able to log on, log off, and do all that kind of stuff. It's so, you know, I got like 10 billion and one things trying to, it was all set. I had everything right where I wanted, and somebody threw a monkey wrench in. You know what I mean? So, That's like,
you know what all that clanging and banging around was?
Yeah, that's like, you know, when, you know where you ever took the time to sit there and build you a house out of cards?
Oh, man.
And every single time you do that, somebody will come by and blow it over.
Right.
Yeah. Now, you get some doggone Gorilla Glue or something like that, then you can just, like, glue them as you go, and then when they come in there, they can huff and puff and try all they want, and it's not going to work. Bang the table, shake the table, and it's still standing, and then you can stick your tongue at them, say, ha-ha, how you like me now, sucker? So, anyway, that's pretty much my house of cards crashed down on me there, and then, somebody always got to come by and do that. And so now we got it rebuilt up, but this time we got super glue behind it, so hopefully that'll hold up. Duct tape, baling wire, super glue, and bungee straps. That's what holds Shaziz Radio together. Alright, so anyway, my point about the whole red line generator is there. You know, if you look at the Electron 2, you can see what I'm using them for on there. And basically, that Electron 2 is a portable generator that you can drive over to where you need the electricity. So, pretty much that's what your car is anyway. If you use inverter systems or those red lines, actually could you could stick one of those in the trunk of your car and have AC power on the go there. Or, like once again, the inverters. There's a trade-off with either one of them, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But let's say, hypothetically, that you could take and figure out a way to use the electricity completely different than you've ever used it before. Instead of using it directly out of the doggone generator, you're going to change that form of energy, move it away from the generator, store it into battery banks or capacitor banks, and then draw off of it from that point there. Now that generator doesn't have to work so hard. See, that's what I've been talking about for quite some time, trying to explain to people the idea of using plasma technology. Now, plasma is going to change that energy from electricity into heat, and then use that heat from that point on to do whatever kind of work you need done. It doesn't matter how you get the work done, as long as you get the work done, right? So, if you're not draining directly off of that generator, these red line generators right here would be a perfect stepping stone for doing what it is that I'm talking about doing. If you take that energy off of this generator without drawing a heavy load on there, then you can get that generator to run a heck of a lot longer than it normally would have on the same battery. You see what I mean? By reducing the effect that you get whenever you put it under a load and it starts to drain more amperage from that battery.
Mm-hmm.
You follow me so far?
No.
No.
I danced to my own drummer.
Oh, who's your drummer?
I don't know, but he ain't named Shaziz.
Oh, okay. It's a terminology thing that we're talking about. Do you follow me? I don't know. Okay. Yeah. Well, do you understand? Well, I can't use understand either, because understand, according to some folks, means you stand under somebody. So, what's the terminology I can use that ain't offensive to the point where it says that, you know. Do you hear what I'm saying, brah?
He went completely the opposite direction from ultimate PC correctness there.
Oh, man. I don't know, man. I'm just...
You have to call the PC police.
Yeah. I'm just trying to explain something as simple as I can possibly explain it. But anyway, it's... Basically, we're using electricity wrong, period. I mean, everything that we got to run out there, it takes too much doggone power to run it. It's not necessary to run it. We just got to find the easier ways to run stuff. When I watch Sky Collection's videos, he specifically is working on doing more work for less. Not trying to get out more than you put in per se. Now, that could be an end-to-end byproduct of his research, but for the moment, just trying to make things run a lot simpler. Like, Lidmotor is also doing the same thing. He's trying to see what kind of work that he can get done using the least amount of energy. I mean, down in the milliamp range. You know, where you're actually getting stuff actually done. Right now, we're just... Yeah?
Sorry. You said actually twice, so...
Oh. Well, you're the terminology police today, man.
I'm just finding it funny and getting a chance to laugh, that's all.
The terminology police is in the house. Look out. Don't say actually. What's the other word? Don't say dodecahedron.
Oh, I thought you were going to say don't use the other term for those people called grammar Nazis.
Oh, yeah. My wife drives me insane if I type something out. I got, like, all kinds of grammar, probably use too much punctuation and all kinds of craziness. You know, I'm just trying to...
Do you ever use those commas?
Yeah, and exclamation.
Not sure if there's supposed to be another one here, so I'm just going to put one there anyway.
Yeah, exclamation points. Like, I'm trying to emphasize everything. But, seriously, though, if, doggone it, my brain just went into reverse or something. Alright, so, we're using everything inefficiently. We're draining more power than we need to drain to actually run things. See, all you have to have is those two magnetic fields be able to interact with each other. They don't have to overlap each other by 75 miles. It's got to be able to interact with each other. You know, you got one field out and the other field comes in contact with it. If they're negative fields, they'll attract. If they're opposite fields, they'll attract. If they're positive fields, they'll repel. Like I said, Lidmotor, he tries to get all these little, essentially in his name, talks about what he's doing. Lidmotor. He builds motors out of in little lid containers, you know, like pill bottles and stuff like that.
Right.
And so it's pretty impressive to see some of the different ways that he runs these things. Some of them he runs off of statics. He builds little static generators and little static motors and different pulse motor systems that he works on. But he takes all these other larger concepts and builds them on a smaller scale just to test the theories on the deals. And so if you take and factor in what we're doing right now with your regular generator, this any generator, doesn't matter, the red line generators that I'm talking about, take the 12 volts AC and turns it into 120 volts AC at 500 watts. 500 watts ain't a whole lot, but you can run 500 watt light bulbs with the doggone thing. You know, that's some light as opposed to none light. Alright, well, anyway, the key about this whole deal is when you're running that, when you're using that 500 watts, if you're using tungsten elements, then you're going to drain that battery down fast because the load that goes back to that battery is going to draw a lot of amperage. But if you find a more efficient lighting system such as LED system, or, you know, starting off from tungsten and working your way down to like fluorescent lighting and then working your way down to LED lighting and so on and so forth, now the further you get down that scale, the less amount you're drawing on that battery, so by definition that battery's going to last a lot longer. Am I wrong?
I don't know.
You don't know.
I don't know if you're wrong or not.
So, an LED, do you think an LED drains more or less energy than a tungsten element light bulb?
Well, the way we use them now, the LEDs obviously drain a lot less, but they also don't put out the same measure of energy whenever you're running them either.
You mean as far as
what? It looks like it's putting out the same amount of energy, but it's because it's basically only putting out the frequencies of light that your eyes can perceive and ignoring putting out any of the frequencies that your eyes can't perceive, so that energy is not being wasted on non-visual light, like UV or infrared. You know, or a whole array of other frequencies that you can see, but you don't really need to see full color. You only need red, green, and blue, and very specific frequencies of that.
So I guess my question, would the amount of lumens that you get off of an LED system be sufficient enough for lighting for you to be able to see just as good as you could if you had a tungsten element light bulb?
Right. You can for that purpose. If you were trying to collect heat, though, salvaging heat off of it at the same time, too, converting it into other energy sources, you're going to find that there's going to be a deficient amount of energy there from the LED versus the tungsten element system.
Yeah, but right now we're just trying to solve the lighting issue alone, just nothing but lighting. All right, we're not,
you mean nothing but seeing.
Yeah, nothing but keeping you from slamming your toe into the coffee table in the dark.
Well, then you just need LED ropes that are down near the floor, shining across the floor.
Yeah,
you don't even need to light up the rest of the room. As long as you see what's on the floor, then you know you're good to go.
Yeah. See, now we're getting somewhere now. So basically, let's say, you know, I want to go from my bedroom to the bathroom, and I got motion sensors set up on the floor, and as soon as I walk in a certain area, it picks up the motion and turns on the light and lights the floor up towards the bathroom. So that's all the lighting that I need to get to the bathroom. I'm not reading or trying to do any work right now.
So you need LEDs and the edges of the floor shining through fiber optics that come out of your in your carpet as like little shag filaments. So you've got shag filament fiber optic carpet.
Yeah. So now, when I'm running that generator, the generator's only going to kick on when those LEDs kick on. So it's not going to drain any battery, any juice off that battery until that light system asks for electricity. So now, basically, what we're talking about is building a smart generator. All right, it's only going to kick on when you're using it. It's not going to sit there and run constantly like a regular gasoline generator would be sitting there running. And if you even if you're not using electricity, you're still using fuel to run it. You see where I'm going with this so far?
Mm-hmm.
All right, so now you got your lighting for your path going down through there, and then if you need a little bit more light to pick something up, then you have a tungsten element light bulb that has quite a bit of watts or lumens to it. Maybe you go with a halogen bulb, all right, so that lights up a wider area. So it's going to drain just a little bit more juice than the LEDs. But once you shut that off, then it's going to go back down to just the LEDs again. So you're only using exactly what you need for every deal that you're going to be doing. Now, these red line generators that I'm talking about, they actually will run, pretty heavy duty, 110 saws and drills and stuff like that. You know, they're not going to obviously run like a 220 stove or something like that, all right? But you could find more efficient ways to actually cook your food as opposed to having to have a 220 stove. You see what I mean?
Mm.
Huh?
No. I can't see that.
All right, well.
I can hear it.
You can hear what
it.
I mean then. So, basically, you seen those little easy bake ovens?
Mm-hmm.
The little toy? Now...
Are we in the right universe for that?
Maybe.
Or are we remembering something that didn't really ever exist in this one?
No, well, basically, for those people out here who haven't got a clue what it is I'm talking about, the kids have a toy that's been around for quite a while, and it's called an easy bake oven, and you can actually bake little cakes in this doggone thing, and it uses like a 100-watt light bulb inside of it.
And right, it uses a special formula for the cupcake and cake mix and whatnot.
Yeah.
So it cooks at that lower temperature.
And so, there you go, you can fry an egg on a light bulb. All right. If you needed to do, if you really actually needed to do some cooking, you could use a light bulb, the heat off of a light bulb, to cook. You could fry things.
But if that's an LED light bulb, that you're getting enough heat off of that for that, then chances are that you're going to be blinded by that light that's coming off it.
Yeah. Well, we're not going to use the LEDs to cook off of. Obviously, we're just going to use those for, you know, lesser needs. But we're going to use the tungsten element or the halogen bulbs to actually generate the heat that you want to use for cooking purposes. So basically, what I'm talking about here is taking and stepping down all your electrical needs from everything that you do all the way down there. I mean, if you don't need 220 volts, if you don't need a big giant element getting red hot to cook your food, and you know, why do it? You see what I mean? I'm trying to...
Because in the 50s and the 40s, energy was plentiful according to the way people thought, so they threw it away.
Yeah.
they run a heating element that basically raises the temperature of the entire house by like 4 or 5 degrees, and then run a bunch of air conditioners to drop it back down at 4 or 5 degrees in the house.
Yeah. So, I'm trying to take step by step through and show how one of these electric generators, these red line generators, now keep in mind, once again, you could also use inverters, all right? But there's a trade-off with each one that you're going to use. You know, one's a little bit more sturdy as far as giving you a cleaner signal, and doesn't get nearly as hot as the other one would. And once the inverter gets hot, then, you know, it's got a little temperature deal in there. It'll shut itself off if it gets too hot. Whereas these red line generators, you don't have to worry about generating the heat, and it's not going to shut itself off. You follow me there?
What about the people out there? How do we find out if they're following?
I don't know. I guess we'll just throw it out there and see if it sticks.
Oh, man. Are we cooking spaghetti here?
Maybe. And last time I did that, it didn't go over so well. Alright, so anyway, so taking one of these doggone generators right here, and basically, instead of trying to energy hog it, using only what you need out of that generator, and we're just going with the standard electricity right now. We're not talking about any modifications. We're just talking about running lesser loads to do the same work. I don't want to stub my toes, so the LED light strips that Tom has talked about are perfect for that. You could do the same thing with AC inverters, you know, or you could run LEDs, DC LEDs. That's one thing amazing about LEDs. You can run them off of DC too. So anyway, actually in those rope strips, I think there's something else that actually allows you to run it that way. I don't know. That's for a different story, different day. So, when you're running all these, even a gasoline generator, gasoline generators in general, basically, once you start it up, it's going to run whether you're taking juice off of it or not, so you're actually wasting electricity or wasting fuel if you're not actually using the generator itself. And the more you put on there, the more it will tax that generator and give you, basically, you have to put more gas in eventually. So, we're talking about taking one of these generators. It's an electric generator. It has a 12-volt motor that spins it up, turns a little generator head, then, you know, gives you out power. Now, you could just run all your stuff directly off of the 12-volt battery, but, oh, man, I just... Alright, well, if you could learn how to use these things more efficiently, I can see where you could actually get a lot more work done for a less amount of input. That's the whole key. A lot more work done for a less amount of input. We're running your car off of hydrogen and oxygen, a lot more work done for less amount of input. That's the whole key to everything that I'm talking about, is that for the most part, everything we do is inefficient as far as energy usage. I mean, we waste so much energy. If that doggone electric motor is getting hot, that means it's working too hard. If you take the same electric motor that you would normally use to, let's say you had a 12 volt motor, electric motor, and you had it directly hooked to a chain gear, and then that was directly connected to a load, that motor is going to have to work really hard in order to turn that load. Now, if you take that same motor and you do a couple modifications to it, like put some sort of cooling fan on there and hook it to a gearbox to where now you're making the gears do the majority of the heavy lifting, then that motor doesn't have to work as hard. You see what I'm saying here? No?
Why you keep coming back to me, man? Don't be throwing me under the bus. Go on.
Now I throw myself under the bus. I'm going nuts.
Well, don't go nuts. You don't have squirrels chasing you.
Yeah, they would, too. Anyway, I saw a really cool video, now that you said squirrel. I saw a really cool video yesterday. This guy found a little baby squirrel, and this little baby squirrel was following him everywhere he went. Those little squirrels are neat. Anyway, back to reality again. So, is it possible to get an electric motor to be a electric generator to basically charge itself, to self-loop? I believe it is, but not directly. I don't believe that you can take it and loop it back around into itself, because you're going to go through all the laws of physics where you got losses from friction and so on and so forth. But if you're moving that away to a completely different power source and changing it to a completely different energy so that it's not coupling back, that's the whole key. And when Lenz's laws takes effect and you energize a coil, where the problem occurs is the moment you put that thing underneath a load and those electrons are able to make a complete loop right back into the same generator that you're trying to take energy off of. Now, you got a second field that is interacting with the first field that you're trying to use to get your power off of. So it starts to act like a brake, because nature's trying to balance itself out. It's trying to put everything back the way it was before you messed it up, so to speak. Now, if you can keep from ever invoking Lenz's law, you're just taking that energy off of that generator head, and instead of putting it, running it directly to a light bulb and allowing that electron flow to go right back into the same generator you're trying to get the power off, you just take off what you want, you send it off in a different direction, you put it in a completely different storage unit, and then run that energy back towards where you want to put it, and which would be back into the same generator. So I believe that in the right configuration, you could literally use the same energy off of the same generator to run that generator. What do you think?
Try it out, man. Find out. I'm a fan of fact, so.
Well, I'm just sitting here troubleshooting this in.
Right, but you're still in the theory land until we physically build it and test it. We're going to continue being a theory.
Yeah.
We test it and prove it, and it works. Then you know it's no longer a theory; it's a fact. You've got proof, you know, evidence.
Well, that's why I like Sky Collection's work in Lid Motor, is because they take that they take those theories and they put them in small scale to see whether or not they'll actually do something. You know, we already know now from some of their research and other folks out there that do research into static energy that it is possible to get work out of static electricity. I mean, there's static motors, static, you know, generators. And so, you know, who's to say you couldn't build a Wimshurst that would have a combination static motor, static generator at the same time?
Right.
You know, the whole key is trying to get something to run itself by putting it under, you know, back, putting the energy back directly into it, that's where you start invoking all the laws of physics that can't be broken. So you're not trying to, we're not trying to say you can break these laws of physics, but if you use them to your advantage as opposed to the opposite, then that's the key. And so I do want to try to put these theories into action, and I need to build certain electric motors in different fashions, but I'd like to try to modify some motors that are already in existence, like a three-phase motor. You know, there's people out there trying to turn those into motor generators. You use the first phase to run the as a motor, and then you draw your energy off to the other two phases. Have you heard of any of those yet? Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you take one of the big, giant three-phase motors, AC motor, you can modify it, put some magnets inside there, and while you're running the first phase, the rotor's spinning around and generating, pushing energy back out the other ones. Mm-hmm. Now, the energy that you're putting in on the one phase, once you start putting it under a direct load on the other, is going to bog that down and make that have to work harder on the first one. So, to me, the key is to take the energy away from it and not allow it to go back into that same generator that you're trying to pull the energy off of. Now, right. If we change this energy completely to a completely different form, into heat, you know, and you're not trying to get out more than you're trying to put in. That's the whole key to the deal. That's where they talk about over unity and, oh, you never can get out more than you put in. We're not trying to do that. We're trying to use it more efficiently than what it is being used right now. And that's the whole key to this entire system, our power grid system all together. You know, they're always talking about, well, turn the light off if you ain't using it. All right, well, that's because you'd be using it more efficiently. If you're using it more efficiently, then obviously they're using less fuel to generate the same amount of power and mm-hmm. still getting the most amount of work done out of it. That's what I'm trying to point out here, is taking these generators and being able to do a whole lot with just a little. How's that sound to you?
I've been trying to do that for quite a while. You know, like I said, gotta sit down and do the work and see if it works.
Yeah.
You know?
Well,
see
I
if
think
you can see how much is it, and if it works, see how well it works. You know, see how much you can squeeze out of that.
I think they're.
We need that lab together, man.
Yeah, we do.
Work, let's talk.
Yeah, we do. But that's what the radio show is for—all the talking. All right. So, anyway.
So let's talk about, how we're going to get to the work itself instead of rehashing ideas that we talk about every week. You were talking about land and maybe putting a new building together?
Yeah.
What about a place for people to stay so they don't have to pay for, like, motel room while they're up there? Like, say you get somebody like Raymond that's got, you know, 2 weeks coming up, like, you know, say he's working a regular job and he's got 2 weeks vacation coming up, he wants to come to work with you at your shop. It'd be kind of expensive to drive up there and pay every single night, you know, $70, $80, $90 a night for a motel room while he's there for 2 weeks. But if you had, like, say, some little apartment-like building thing on the side there where you could put up to, like, maybe four people, you know, save a lot of money, and then you'd have probably a consistent group of people there almost all the time. It wouldn't just be you alone. People would be dropping in all the time and working on stuff with you. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I like the way you think. Well, I've got 12 acres of land, and I'll work on trying to get a building up that people can go. Basically, the building itself, we could build sleeping quarters and all that kind of stuff in there.
Right. Well, another thing, too, to cut back on the expense of setting things up is setting up connections to your water and your sewage so that basically if they have an RV, they can just pull up and connect to that and they bring their, you know, they basically take their mess with them when they go, too. There's no chance they make a mess and then you got to clean it up or break something or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, most they can break is like a, you know, a valve to the water or something. Not able to put a hole in the wall or knock out a window or anything like that, because that's all their stuff that they're taking with them, too. Because RVs aren't really that expensive.
No. Anyway, if we could get a place set up like what you're talking about right there, we could actually put these concepts and ideas to work. That's going to take some different deal. I'm working on some alternative methods of funding that doesn't require me asking people for money. I don't like
just ask them for help. They show up with their pickup, and you know, you got a couch from the crash home or something like that. While you guys get out there and they haul whatever materials they can find and bring with them. Like, you know, I told you before, if I had a pickup and gas, I can literally, I know tons of places I go pick up 2x4s and even up to whole sheets of plywood and whatnot that are basically disposed of, you know.
Well, I'd like to get you, Raymond.
In really good shape, you know.
I'd like to get you, Raymond, and Muddy down here, and we can start working with what resources I got available already.
Well, then there's, you know, what Raymond said, where he's basically in deconstruction. So they pay him to haul stuff away that's still perfectly good that could be used to build that structure.
Yeah.
We just need a way to get it up there, and a few good hands that know how to put stuff, how to do some construction, and you know, make sure all your ducks are in a row so you don't get any trouble with anybody there over licensing or any of that nonsense, you know.
Yeah, I got that.
And
under
before
control.
You know it, we'd have that knocked up, you know.
I like Muddy's idea of the geodesic domes. Those seem to be pretty reasonably strong structures and don't look like it'd be all that expensive to actually build.
I wouldn't mind coming up there and trying to build a couple geodesics that are actually multi-stacked, you know?
Yeah.
Like, they're fused together like bubbles of soap.
That'd be
cool.
You
got more than one floor, yeah.
All right, so...
kind of spacey in there, too.
So, anyway, what I'd like to do... let's just say hypothetically, this pans out the way that I like to see it happen. We start off with one geodesic dome, kind of like the biosphere that was made out there in the desert years ago. I don't know if you ever remember, they built the biosphere to see if people could live inside it for a certain period of time. Don't know whatever happened.
That's where they got the idea for one of their, what is it, the Yahoo Serious movies or something?
Yeah.
So...
anyway, I'm not talking about like
small town.
Everybody goes inside the biosphere and lives in there, but basically some of what you can take away from that show, some of what they did in there, you know, to have the thing self-contained. Like, we build a geodesic dome, and we start off with 140-watt solar panel. That's all the power that thing's got, period. And
I'd say that'd be a good idea, too, to start off with something like that and then get some metal screen to stretch over the entire outside of it. That way you can run all the Tesla experiments you want without worrying about the FCC coming down on you.
Yeah.
So you could then ground that to earth ground and make sure that nothing escapes, you know.
And
you know, you're testing inside the building.
As far as the power needs, then we could build it as we go, because, like, you know, okay, we got our lighting situated. That little 40-watt solar panel covers all the lighting in this entire dome. And maybe even a fan or two. But anything we need from that point on, if we need to be able to run equipment, then we have to design a power system that would be self-contained, that would run that one, just the one thing that we needed to run.
Well, I told you about those. There's like practically, they're just because they have little chips in them, they can't sell them out of the manufacturer. So you've got these brand new solar cells that put out just as much power as your average the solar cells that they normally sell, and they'll box those up because they got little chips on them and whatnot, and over 80% of them are full wattage output. Even though, you know, they look a little ugly, but, I think it was 4,000 watts worth of them for, like, $500.
Well, that's not bad at all.
No, that's, you know, it's like 12 cents a kilowatt or something. I mean, 12 cents a watt or something like that. And that's for 20 years. Over the course of 20 years, you're going to pay a whole lot more than $500 for the equivalent amount of energy of what it takes to run a 2 or 3 bedroom house, you know?
Yeah. And so if each individual system in this house had its own power source, including a water pump or whatever to circulate your water, if mm-hmm. each individual deal had its own power source, and, you know, let's say, like, we got a water pump, and it runs on its own battery bank, we got a lighting system runs on its own battery bank, a heating system that runs on its own battery bank, so on and so forth, all the way through this entire deal. If one system goes down, then it doesn't affect the rest of it. You still got that up and running.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I mean? And so I think the whole concept of doing this from start to finish would make for some really good how-to videos to show people how to set their house up differently and more efficiently. And using...
Yeah, just don't use any Benny Hill themes in the background.
Yeah. You know, that I love that doggone tune because it's a humorous tune. You don't even have to see any video with that. Just listening to the tune gives you a funny feeling inside. You know, it's funny. It's hilarious. Anyway, because you can visualize all kinds of crazy stuff to that music. But somebody copyrighted it. Anyway.
Off the copyright, yeah.
So... I think that's going to be my next step as far as trying to get a building together. I'm going to try to find the materials to build a geodesic dome, you know, and that'll be the start of the new lab. I want this thing to use everything efficiently. The sunlight, you know, during the daytime, in the wintertime, you shouldn't have to have a heater system if the sun's out. You could use the sunlight to heat up the inside of that, because if you ever notice that you get inside a car, it's still cold in there, but it's a lot warmer than it is outside.
Mm-hmm.
Because of that glass and the heat building up inside there. And so using everything as efficiently as possible, and including your heating of your water and your storage of your water, I think you could literally turn a small generator into enough power to run your entire house. You know, and of course, as it stands right now, you couldn't run an entire house off of a 2,500 watt generator. It's not possible. You know, because it's taxing it too much. But if you remodify all the systems in that house to only use what it absolutely needs, I mean, why run a, you know, even a 110 volt or 120 volt AC hot plate if you could do the same thing off of a doggone halogen bulb? You see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Because those halogen bulbs, they get extremely hot. You sure don't want
to
touch
them. 300 watt halogen as opposed to a 1500 watt hot plate.
Yep. So there you go. That's basically what I'm talking about. And so as far as cooking wise, we could cook with the heat off of the light, you know. And actually, if we did it right, use that same light that we're cooking with to, you know, we could guide it around with fiber optics. Put it where we want it, you know. While you're cooking with the light, you could actually loop that light up the wall and back down right above you.
If you're cooking, then chances are you probably need to have some special cookware that's coated with something that would absorb the energy that's coming off of that as heat and convert it into heat into the pan and reflect whatever is not heat off of it, so you can then redirect just the light that's for visual purposes where it belongs, instead of sending the heat rays through that too. You know, infrared light, it, when it strikes something, turns into heat. Instead, it ends up going through that fiber optic and coming out the end. The eye can't even see it. And you feel this little bit of heat coming off the end of your fiber optic, which means it's basically degrading your fiber optic line.
Well, there was Muddy talked about this, and actually a lot of us talked about it at one point. Even Steve talked about it. There's individuals in what they classify as third world countries that take soda bottles, and they will actually put like bleach water inside there and mount it through the roof of their house so that the sunlight refracts from outside and gives them basically the equivalence of a 60 to 100 watt light bulb inside their house. Well,
some of the articles that were saying like 40 watts, and it was like a little 16-ounce water bottle full of water. And the water is the main important component. The bleach is to keep anything, I think, from growing in it.
Yeah, keep it from building up moss or algae.
Right, that way the light can still get through, because otherwise you'll get stuff that's going to start trying to grow in there. So, I mean, if that's the case, you could probably do the same thing with just an excess of salt. You put too much salt water and nothing's going to grow in it either. So if you don't have access to bleach, you can just go out and get some salt.
Yeah.
Anything. I don't know if you've ever, have you ever looked at water that has a lot of salt in it when you pour it into water that has no salt in it?
Uh-uh.
You should try that. That's an interesting experiment and experience.
Well, what do you see?
You know those little heat wave lines you see coming up off a road when you look off in the distance down, like, say, a desert road?
Yeah.
It's kind of like that, but it's a liquid form of it.
Huh. That's so interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So, basically, I think I can do this. I think I can do this with some really cheap materials, but actually make it really strong. I was actually thinking about, you know, people have been making furniture out of PVC plumbing. Have you seen that?
Yeah, I don't think I would trust that. I wouldn't mind using the gray PVC and the fixtures for that, for building like a framework for a greenhouse.
Yeah.
But for sitting on, not really sure about that.
Well,
sitting on, laying on. Yeah. Have you ever had a piece of broken PVC hit you, like stab you?
I think once or twice. Yeah, it's not pleasant.
Right. So the thought that comes to mind is that this guy that we used to do these, it's called a boffer sport, where basically you decorate up a piece of foam with electrical tape and whatnot over a piece of PVC to look like most of them look like baseball bats, but they were supposed to be representative of like a sword or something, right? That way you're not hurting each other when you whack each other with those things. And he wanted to make a katana, so he heated a piece of that PVC tube up, and he's like, how did they get that end? So he cut the piece of PVC tube at an angle like that. And luckily, one of my friends was working with them, teaching him and a couple other people how to make these things right, and he saw that and was just like, no, no, no. Because he basically had a piece of PVC syringe. If he'd have hit somebody with that thing, it would have went right through that foam and stuck right in their body, and the next thing you know, they'd been, you know, shooting blood out the other end of it, the way those little taps on, you know, a maple tree shoot out syrup. So, yeah.
What a mess.
For furniture, I don't know about that. The gray is probably a little safer because it's really hard to break that stuff. It'll bend before it breaks. It's a lot harder, too, than most the white PVC. You know what I'm talking about, the electrical conduit, the plastic electrical conduit?
Yeah.
That's the stuff right there. Or, if you can get away with it, get yourself that, it's used, I think, not only for running, like, cables and stuff like that underground, under roads and whatnot, but also for pumping natural gas and whatnot through, usually an orange or a blue pipe. It's the same stuff that those 55-gallon barrel drums are made out of, so that's some pretty hardy stuff. Like, you could get that stuff down to 30 degrees below zero and bend it, and it won't snap. So,
wonder about building a geodesic dome out of rebar. You know,
I
like
see
you put
it
down in concrete?
Yeah, I can see that working.
Just the frame in itself. You have to probably weld it while it's on the ground, and then, you know, work your way that way.
But you might be able to get away with not welding it. You could probably use some heavy duty like steel gauge wire to wrap it all up. Just have to paint the whole thing afterwards so it doesn't rust.
Yeah.
But other than that, yeah, I think that could be pretty sturdy. I mean, I don't know if you've ever been slapped by a 20 or 30 foot long piece of rebar as it's coming off a truck, but I've seen somebody get hit by one and broke their arm.
Yeah, well, that's
so
it's going to be the number one. I'm just trying
right.
to.
Well, I'm just looking at it as like if it's got that much strength, then it should have enough strength to hold a structure up. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Once you get it in place and lashed down so it's not wobbling around or flapping around or anything like that, you could, you know, walk around on the boards laid on top of it and not have to worry about it sagging or falling, you know.
So we start off with one dome, and the best thing about it is that the plans are pretty well universal. We could add to it in tunnels from dome to dome and do it like that, you know. Domes are going to be good because of, you know, wind. If the wind usually go around the dome as opposed to some flat building or whatever, and probably even it would be beneficial as far as shedding off rain.
We're talking about mad science here. Why haven't you mentioned using a backhoe or something and building an underground lab?
Well, then, because you're going to have to get into concrete then.
Well, again, we can talk about that too. I mean, you can use electricity to split salt to get sodium hydroxide, and then you cook that sodium hydroxide and glass together, like broken bottles and whatnot, and you get sodium silicate, which is one of the main constituents that they use for making concrete.
Oh, there's one other deal that I just kind of run across my mind. It sounds kind of crazy, but one of the things that we have access to a lot of is clay, natural clay.
Is it fireable?
Yeah.
You know what the composition is, like how much kaolin is in it and all the other compounds that they normally make ceramic and porcelain clays out of?
Well, I know that basically this particular kind of clay that is in my area, I know they used to make pots out of it.
Okay, so if we built bricks out of that, and set ourselves a solar smelter where you got a bunch of mirrors pointed at a central chamber and some sort of, like, you just cover it with carbon. You could literally heat that stuff up to fire it with using just the sun.
Well, I've got I've got plenty of mirrors. Tons of mirrors. So there we go, man. We could actually fire our own bricks with those mirrors.
Yep. Get some, instead of using those plastic bottles, we can use some glass bottles and water or glass tubes or something to run from the surface down in there and set those mirrors up around those things to reflect sunlight onto those whenever you want to, you know, use it for light after it's all set up, too. Instead of a little 40-watt bulb or 80-watt bulb worth of light coming into that little thing, you'd literally have like a, you know, 500 to 1500-watt halogen light lamp worth of light shooting down in there even on a cloudy day.
I think that it probably wouldn't take a whole lot of people in order to do exactly what it is that we're saying. So I think we could kind of shrink the dream team down for a moment long enough to get the first portion of this started.
Mm-hmm.
Because around my area, I have access to tons and tons, a probably unlimited supply of clay, and using that nothing but what we could find around here, natural resources and stuff, and what, you know, already stuff that we could salvage up, we could actually build something decent.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder, hypothetically, how let's say you took and dug a foundation just right in the ground. You never even moved the clay out. Just dug the foundation down, and you built a super hot blast furnace inside there. Would that be enough to actually heat that clay into ceramic?
You'd have to look at the amount of energy being generated versus the amount that's being absorbed to find out. Not only would you have enough to saturate it all before it could have, you know, you've got radiant property to deal with, where basically the heat absorbed also radiates back off it. So you'd have to basically be able to keep pumping more into it, then it can radiate off. And if you can do that, then you just have to calculate how long it takes to saturate it with enough energy to cause the material to silicates and the aluminates to fuse together.
Well, can you visualize what it is that I'm getting at?
Yeah, completely.
Yeah, so you'd basically be able to seal that ground up where that clay is by basically fusing it into ceramic. And if you could get it to do it a couple feet thick, that'd be yet even better.
I'm wondering if there's something growing in the area that you could basically heat the compounds that come out of it, that you couldn't just soak the clay in that and let it air dry and harden so that it would basically become like a hard plastic.
Well,
pine sap, stuff like that.
Are you familiar with lightning glass, otherwise known as folgerites?
Yeah.
Now imagine if you could take some doggone sand and an area of sand and basically take your grid and chicken wire or whatever, right?
Right.
And build you like a dome and just basically fill this sand up over the top of this dome and then shoot some really super high voltage in through that thing enough to heat up and fuse that into glass right around that doggone deal, and then all you'd have to do is scoop out the sand from the inside of it.
Mm-hmm. You're talking Egyptian-style building?
Yeah.
Scoop the sand out after the pyramid's built, so that way while you're putting it together, the system doesn't basically collapse in on it before you have a chance to place all the stones in place.
Well, I think that'd be brilliant, man.
You don't have any... What kind of stone do you have in the area?
I'm not sure what it's actually called. I know there's a lot of limestone, and there's this other is kind of like almost like marble. It's not flint, but it's looks like flint.
So we got somebody that was talking about using a wheel with magnets all the way around it. And spinning that thing around and using it to cut and crack stone with the magnetic field. If that stone is actually susceptible to that, you might be able to use that then instead.
Yep.
Set you up some stone blocks and lay them in place, you know?
Well, Muddy sent me some diagrams for building geodesic domes out of like treated plywood or treated 2x4s and stuff like that. So I'm going to take a second look at those and see if that's a deal to maybe get one of them started. But I'd like to try some different materials just to see what holds up and what doesn't. I know that plastics aren't necessarily going to be the best because after so many days or years or whatever UV rays hitting them, they get really brittle, you know, from the temperature change and all that kind of stuff. And so, you know, I guess if it was initially a plastic structure and that was never really exposed to sunlight, it'd probably last quite a long time. What do you think?
Yeah, you could see that.
So you could actually use recycled plastic to build beams, you know? You just have to
paint them and keep them painted.
Yeah.
If the paint wears off, they put some more paint on it to keep the sun from hitting it. If it's, depending on the plastic, some of those, like the polyethylene, has a half-life of 500,000 years, so I don't think you're going to have to worry about that breaking down before you're ready to get rid of it.
Well, it kind of solves a couple problems here, you know? A lot of trash goes to waste. A lot of it gets thrown off into dumps. Now, imagine if you could get enough people involved in recycling just the materials to build what it is that you want to build. So basically, we'd tell everybody, we're going to build a self-contained biosphere out of trash, just to show you that it can be done.
Right. You let people know what you need, and let them bring it and get rid of it.
Bring your old aluminum cans and plastic bottles and glass bottles, because... I had an idea one time about glass bottles, and I saw a video at one point of somebody who actually built a wall using glass bottles.
Mm-hmm.
And now they used like I think
glass bottles and mortar, or cement, or something like that.
Yeah. Well, yeah. You could actually use clay, you know, in between the bottles. And one of the things that probably be beneficial about the clay is while the sun is beating down on those glass bottles, it could actually probably heat that clay and dry it out for you.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of possibilities there, man. But, you know, you've got a wall that's made out of old glass bottles. There's a couple different things that you could probably do with that, you know?
Right.
Like take humidity and turn it into water. You see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
If it's cool on one side of the wall and it's hot on the other side with the sun beating down on the other side, that moisture is going to get up inside there and condense into water.
Right. Just have to keep those bottles tilted in a direction that it can all roll out afterwards when it builds up.
Yeah. So if you build them at a slight, you know, maybe a slight angle, just enough to keep the, you know, where it's got plenty of drainage.
As long as the wall, the stuff is held together with something that if you pour water off of it, like you could basically use it to make a cup and drink out of it, and it won't hurt you. If it's something like that, you'd be good to go, because anything that's running off of that would basically just be pure drinking water constantly. You'd be getting distilled drinking water out of your building.
Yeah. Well, see, that's what I'm talking about. Just different little ideas like that all combined in from the ground up. You know, you start building this doggone thing. You got one room that just uses nothing but humidity in the air to bring you some fresh water.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And using the bottle gardening concept where you're actually growing stuff inside. It's pretty neat. They got this one video I saw recently where a guy had put a plant inside a bottle, and I can't remember how many years, but it's been quite a few years that it's been in this deal. It's all totally self-contained. The lid screwed down on it, and the plant's still alive, been alive ever since, because basically the plant itself is recycling the water. It's recycling everything in there.
Right.
So that'd be a pretty brilliant little plan right there to build a system like that for, you know, edible plants. Grow lettuce or something like that in there, you know?
Yeah.
And then, you know, whenever you need some of it, you just unscrew the cap and pull out a couple pieces what you need and screw the cap back on.
Well, I think eventually you're going to run out of plant there, because it's going to run out of carbon dioxide and whatever else it's using to generate carbon for making its resources out of. Oh. So the plant will just keep getting smaller and smaller.
So what if you put some every so often, when you take something out, you put something back?
Yeah, that's the trick right there.
Yeah.
So
either way, using everything as efficient as possible. That's the whole key of everything, even the generators, you know. That's why I wanted to bring up these red line generators, to bring us to this point where you're taking these generators where they don't seem like you could get a lot, but imagine how many LEDs that you could run off of 500 watts.
Right.
That's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're only using 500 watts to light your entire building, that's pretty doggone impressive as far as I'm concerned. You know,
right
now, go around and add up every tungsten element light bulb or even the fluorescent bulbs with the ballast on there. Add them up. For every light bulb, you got a ballast, you know. You know, every light fixture or whatever, you got a ballast in there. And so in this room alone, I've got two double bulb units up in the roof there. And so there's at least two ballasts there. So that's, 120 volts times two that I'm running if I got them both on at the same time.
Right.
And so with an LED system, or even using not just, the LED system by itself, but throwing in some fiber optics where you can take some of that light and disperse it evenly across the ceiling or whatever. You know, imagine instead of a little round fiber optic tube like you see on Christmas lights, imagine a piece of that material designed in a panel where you've got a light on one side and it just refracts across there and evenly distributes that energy. What do you think?
Right. I'm just wondering when we're going to get this little ball rolling.
Well, I'm on it right now. I'm ready to get started right now. You know, right at this very moment.
Start laying your plans out and everything. If you're going to invite other people to come and help and figure out exactly what's going to be going on, so that way they show up, it won't be that hard for them to know exactly what they're coming to do, you know. Be prepared to do it.
Well, right now is the first...
90% of the time is wasted in any project in having to constantly try to figure out what's next. You get all that laid out ahead of time, things go a lot smoother and a lot faster.
Right now, I think it's the perfect time because it's summertime. It's just now coming into summertime, and so, the weather's going to be pretty decent. You know, of course, we're going to have a little bit of rain issues, sure, but we can figure out other things to do while it's raining. You know, inside work for the rainy days and outside work for the other. The main thing is just to get a structure going.
You were talking about PVC and whatnot. There's nothing wrong with setting up tarps and PVC and whatnot and some rope to build structures for working outside, and if it is raining, so you don't have to stop, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, the last thing you want to do, if we are making our own concrete there and getting ready to pour it, it starts raining, and it's not the kind that can withstand being rained on. It'll ruin it, and we have to, you know, it's setting up while we're basically running inside to get out of the rain. Well, screw that. Just throw that up over it, so that way there's no way it can get wet, you know.
Well, they got a lot of these modern-day tents, these dome-type tents that seem to be pretty doggone sturdy. Even in the wind, they don't seem to, you know, really bow over really bad.
Mm-hmm.
So if we could use that same concept and maybe some carbon fiber, you know, to make some thicker rods than what you'd normally have that are still able to bend,
mm-hmm.
and we could actually build some stakes that had... you know, connectors where all you did, had to do is slide that rod down in there and pin it up. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Stephen Gibbons posted he's posted several links over there at www.shazizradio.com/superchat.html. And he said, loving the lighting dome idea, Shaziz. I had a similar thought on the megalithic stones around the world that they could have filled the hemp sacks with the sand, gravel, and water, then run high voltage current through it, heating it and turning it into stone after the sacks would decompose, leaving the stones with little to no gap between. That may be exactly how they did it, man. It's brilliant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So instead of trying to move the material... you know, after it's already, you know, fashioned into a stove, you just build it right where you want it, you know, with existing material.
Yeah.
So anyway, I think that sounds like a good plan, man. And in the process of that, we could actually do all these other concepts and ideas that we wanted to do as well. There's a pop-pop boat contest and all that kind of stuff. Get that going right alongside it, you know. Build it as you go, that kind of deal. And mm-hmm. I think that if we actually got the ball rolling, that, you know, when people started seeing that it was, you know, being productive and actually getting things going, that we could actually get some people to come join in and, you know, share their information as well. What do you think?
Yeah.
So... I guess that's the best goal. I got a good spot already picked out and mowed out. I'll start on a dome. You know, I get something really sturdy, and I got, like I said, I bought a ton of mirrors a while back at an auction, and a whole skid full of them. And those would be perfect for building a solar forge like you were talking about. But
solar furnace.
Yeah, but I would need some assistance with that as far as designing, you know, exactly how to do it. I got the materials. I just need some brain power with that one, because I don't want to either send a death ray to the space station and fry everybody up there.
you don't want to send a death ray up that level, strength beam up to the moon and carve your face into the moon.
that would be cool. If I could carve Shaziz into the moon, I'd either would it be illegal to carve Shaziz into the moon?
I don't know. I have a feeling that it'd be kind of hard for them to really say anything about that, because it's not on Earth. You know,
yeah.
I mean, who owns the moon?
Yeah, it's not necessarily a national treasure, is it? It's a world treasure. I don't know. It's off the planet, so.
Yeah, I'd say make sure you cover that. You hit those areas where they've got flags planted. Make sure that way when they start complaining, saying you destroyed our thing or this or that. What is that? Your country? That ain't no country. Well, what do you mean? No flag, no country.
Yeah. So if I get up to the moon, I'll just plant my own flag and we'll build it there. Yeah, it's not like it couldn't be done.
Well, the thing out there on the 12 acres sounds pretty doable, so.
Yeah, and it's with resources that are within, you know, reason, within reach. You know, I, like I said, I got tons of clay. There's not no problem of ever running out of that. Also, I found a big chunk of slate. There's a basically a a massive plate of slate up underneath there too, the black slate. Mm-hmm. And so that black slate could probably be used for absorbing heat, you know.
Making chalkboards.
Yeah, well, you could do that too.
We're using a chalkboard we made ourselves right here out of rock out of the ground. Now pay attention.
But from start to finish, you know, if people built houses from this point on to be super efficient, you know, you could pipe light in any direction. It's been done for years. I mean, fiber optics, the Ride the Lights logo, where they're talking about high-speed internet using you know, fiber optic lighting. And now all it's doing is sending dots and dashes and ones and zeros, you know, to the other side, and the receiver on the other side could translate it back into data and sound, for that matter.
Mm-hmm.
But those go under the ground and round things, and, you know, in all different, it's like a loop. You could zigzag it and spin it around in circles or whatever.
Right, and light goes in one end and it always comes out the other end, as long as it's not damaged.
Yeah.
Most of it is transmitted through it. It doesn't come out around the side. So
let's say you wanted to take and you want to bring some light to your basement instead of having any lighting down there at all. You could pipe the light from the upstairs down into the downstairs and just use fiber optics to send it down to the basement. So you're not using any power to light your basement whatsoever.
That's what I was talking about, like water-filled glass tubes running from the outside world into an underground lair. And you set up a bunch of mirrors so that there's a ton of light pouring out of each of those glass, you know, those glass bulbs full of water down there, so that way it's able to actually light up. You'd be able to basically pump enough light down there, you could actually grow food down there.
Yeah. Basically, you could pump sunlight in, you know, just the same way they did the water bottle. You know, take that same concept and do the same thing for your basement. So no matter how many levels...
You just nailed it on the head, though. They poke a hole and let the sunlight come in. We're talking about pumping the sunlight, meaning taking a whole bunch of it and jamming it into a little tiny hole, so that when it comes out the other end, you got a flood of it coming out the other end.
Yeah.
Because there really isn't much of a limit of what you can shove through those things except the heat that it can handle as it's passing through it.
Yep.
And if you put a decent filter on it, you could filter out rays that basically do your plants absolutely no good, or your, you know, person down there working, trying to look at stuff, no good. But it generates a bunch of heat, so you could cut down on the amount of heat that goes off of those mirrors and into that structure to be reflected down or concentrated down into the building. It's underground.
What would be really interesting to also factor in is to see what temperature that water inside those bottles actually reaches.
Right.
Because you know that when that sunlight's going through there, that water's got to be getting warmer.
Right. It's still going to be a lot warmer, though, if you've got something that's black in there that light's striking and absorbing into and then radiating heat back off it into the water.
Yeah.
If you're trying to generate power off the heat.
So even with solar power, you know, you got wasted energy, because the back of those solar panels, they get hotter than heck because, you know, got sun beating down on them.
Mm-hmm.
And so why...
And they're dark, so they're absorbing a lot of light, turning it into heat.
Yeah, why not take and use that waste heat that's creating because of the way that they're designed to heat your water at the same time while you're doing your electricity? See, those are the ideas that I'm talking about. So, you know, using the electricity more efficiently, that's been the whole theme of everything I've been trying to point out today. You know, using those red line generators, getting the most out of that you would, you know, if you try to use one of those to run, you know, your house like that, you're going to get a disappointing deal out of the deal, because it's just not going to happen. There's not enough power to run the energy hogs that we're trying to run. But if you're running small, non-resistive loads that, you know, even lesser resistive loads, then you're going to be able to run a whole lot more off of that doggone thing than you thought. You see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So we did our start to finish, start off with one 40-watt or 45-watt panel. I can't remember which ones I got. But one little panel kit, and that would run all the lighting for the entire deal, and maybe even fans to circulate air in and out. We could also use things that occur naturally, and I think you at one point mentioned this a long time ago about attics and the way that they the heat actually causes a draft that sucks the cool air in there and helps to cool things down.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's things that are happening during the summertime that you don't want, such as, you know, heat buildup, and you got to put a fan in the window to try to circulate it out. Well, why couldn't you take that, use that heat to actually cause the draft? That's what I'm talking about.
Well, I told my idea was to put something up over the building so that during the summer you can shade the building.
Yeah.
The heat is, either light is reflected off, or what heat generates on where it's striking is then evaporated or radiated off into the air instead of directly into the building.
And the
and you paint the building with a black coating so that basically during the winter when it's getting cold, you tilt those things up or remove them so the sun can hit the building and heat it up.
Yeah, the brilliance about what you just talked about was that we also talked about piping in light. So you could strategically place deals where it wouldn't be painted black. You'd have a lens up there that was pumping sunlight in. You know,
right.
And when you shaded it up, you could still have those sections that would still be open. So the only time
you were saying you got a whole bunch of mirrors too. So
yeah, I got tons of them.
Set them out on some sort of track so that they're basically reflecting sunlight onto the building during the winter, and you don't have to pay a heating bill at all. Then, if that building is made out of the right material, but that black is coated on top of, it'll take a while for it to soak in, but it's going to be busy, you know, radiating the heat out from the day before.
What would be,
it's going to be holding so much heat already, you know?
What would be the insulation factor of clay bricks?
It's pretty decent, so.
And so if you could figure out a way to make these interlocking, like instead of making like your standard brick, like making, like a half, like if you're going to build a circle, make them where you can notch. Like one end has a male and the other has a female, and when you set these things down, you could notch them or you could flip them over in different directions and they'd still notch in each other and they'd make a complete circle, whatever circumference that you wanted.
Right.
You see what I'm saying?
You talk about saying keep it sealed.
Yeah, so that you can seal it up. That way, whenever you put them together, you could put some sort of thin, like glue or something like that in there, and when you slide them together and the glue dries up, it doesn't even necessarily have to be glue per se. I mean, there's things you could use like mud or clay, you know, wet clay to do it. Seal them up with that. That way,
well, you can use chemical reactions to make. I mean, that's how they make concrete.
Yeah.
All of that information is available online. We can call that up and figure out how to make that stuff right out of the materials available locally.
Stephen Gibbons posted a couple links in there. One of them's for sketching for geodesic domes, plans for a geodesic dome to use with SketchUp software, and another one's for building a functional geodesic dome. I think that would be the best go because, out here it does get a little windy sometimes, and a dome shape would be the probably really strong structure. There's a lot of those. I don't know if you know what a Quonset hut is, but they use a lot of those because of the wind factor, you know?
Right. Well, I found that design, too, for basically just a flat sheet of metal that it's not hard to make those things at all. You just basically cut these discs out of I guess it'd be either hexes or pentagon-shaped pieces of sheet metal, and then you cut a slit in between where the two boards are going to be lined up against it when they come together, or where the boards come together, where you got two of them side by side, you cut a slit, and then you just basically bend the edge down around the two boards.
Yeah.
One side one way, and the other one the other way, and then you, if you poke holes in all that using a sheet metal punch, you could then structure that thing together in no time flat and hold it all together with those plates, and they seal up the hole where the boards come together automatically too.
Cool.
So
all right, so that'd
I'll send you a link to the image, and I guess I can throw a PDF or something you can print out with a laser printer or whatever and use that as a pattern to cut them out. So
That'd be a good starting point on my behalf, and then I'll build a dome and see if I can get people to come out here and tinker around with it to make it all energy efficient.
Right.
And, you know, do a step-by-step video, put it on flash drive, pass it around to people, you know, and do it like that. That's the best.
I think having something that stands out on top of it, like have little openings that you can put these little pegs into, and you can attach a tarp that stands up off. But I'm sure you've seen like tents where basically there you got the tent, and then you got another thing over top of it that looks like another tent on top of it. You know what I'm talking about? And there's like a couple inches in between the two.
Yeah.
Use that to basically shade the thing, so that way during the summer you don't have to worry about a tremendous amount of cooling to try to keep the inside cool, you know, just to get you started.
Well, and there's also other methods that we could also use as far as cooling wise. You know, like double pane glass. What about a double hold? Basically an air pocket in between two domes, a smaller dome and then a larger dome right over the top of it.
Well, that's what I'm saying. If it shades it, but it doesn't block airflow from flowing between the two domes,
yeah,
that's then what the heat that's generated on the outside dome cannot convect into the inside dome readily. Instead, it keeps getting blown away,
which is why
being under trees keeps you so cool, because the leaves are all loose and the air is blowing in between them, constantly carrying any heat that's generated on the leaves that, as they're being struck by the sun, away from the area, instead of allowing that heat to build up and eventually stagnate down to the ground.
Well, there you go, man. There's a bunch of different ideas on that deal. Get together, troubleshoot it, and the best part about it is if we get one dome standardized to where we like it, you know, it's got the lighting issue, the cooling, and everything all built with it. I saw a really interesting greenhouse built out of PVC plumbing that was basically built like a Quonset hut. They took some rebar stakes and put them down in the ground, and they were able to bend their use
PVC and stretch it over top of it.
Yeah, but in the process of doing this, they were able to basically hook a garden hose deal up that would feed water right into the plumbing itself, and water from the inside like a sprinkler system.
Right. So basically, they had a bunch of little holes in the the PVC tubing they were using to build the structure that the clear plastic was stretched over it. Whenever they turned that on, it would basically run out of those holes strategically and drop over the plants.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty brilliant. So, you know, heck, that might even be another idea portion of this deal. You know, make your sort of like your emergency sprinkler system for fire suppression. Flood the dome.
Better hook that thing up to argon gas or something.
Yeah, anything.
Flooding that room full of water if you got an electric fire going on.
Yeah. You know, electric fire, shut the power off first.
Yeah.
Anyway, Stephen posted in here, the geodesic dome is a weak structure until you install the last piece of it that becomes the strongest, so build in good weather. Cool.
Yeah, build while the wind's not blowing, but it's done by the time the wind starts blowing, is what he's saying.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't want to end up with a kite. I have seen some of those dome type tents that when wind picks them up, it blows them over, not because of the way it's shaped, but because it can get underneath it.
Right. Yeah, he's talking about you don't want a eggshell that's getting crushed by the wind.
Yeah.
Because you have all the shell there, you know.
But if you use if you could fire the clay that you could get naturally, you could build like a big giant ring, you know, around like where you're going to put your dome, and then you put your dome on the top of it like a foundation. You see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so, while you're firing it up, you could actually strategically in these bricks put something where you could plug in a certain size of PVC plumbing down inside that brick. So it's already, the brick already comes with the slots ready. You follow me?
Yeah. Well, it's still a clay. It's not that hard to form it any way you want in a mold. So you just make sure the mold can basically provide all the structure and shape for the brick that you want and just start popping them out. You can literally make your mold so it's almost like a cookie cutter, too. You know, you just roll the clay up, punch that thing down over it and pull the excess away and then throw them in your kiln to fire them. As soon as they've sat in there long enough and drying out from the sun beating down on that kiln, then you go ahead and turn all those mirrors on it and finish heating it up to melt that alumina and that silica together.
I think that'd be brilliant.
Those are the kind of bricks, too, that they talk about cover from gunfire. Everybody thinks that the bricks that they see in most houses today will protect you if somebody's shooting outside your house, and they won't. They're just made out of what they call prick brick. They're soft and spongy compared to the bricks you're talking about that are actually more like solid chunks of glass.
Well, I've seen pieces of pottery down in the creeks and stuff like that that probably are at least 100 or 200 years old, or sometimes even more if they're made by Native Americans. There are pieces of pottery that's, stood the test of time.
Depending on your stones, too, you could add aggregate to it to avoid basically using so much of that clay, too.
Yeah.
Mix it up into it, so.
Sand would probably be a good one if you could figure out a way to heat it up hot enough to make it fuse together.
Well, if you're going to do that, if you've got sand there, like I said, the idea is to throw a whole bunch of those mirrors up so they're all concentrating all the light into a tiny little area.
Yeah.
And you could literally get it hot enough in that area where you could just pour sand through that area, in a stream, and as it passes through that area, it would liquefy and just have a mold at the bottom that can handle that. And have those molds on like a little conveyor belt so you can basically run them through after they're full and get the next one ready so you can fill it up too. Get pure glass bricks out of it. It'd look like basically, if the sand isn't clean, it'd look like dirty quartz,
Yeah.
Which is essentially what they'd be. They'd be quartz with, impurities.
Well, sounds like a plan to me, man. Radio silence. What do you say we take a refresh music break?
Yeah, let's do that.
Alright, everybody, you're listening to Mad Science. Stay tuned. I'll throw on a couple totally, completely unrelated songs and give you culture shock or something.
Man, where'd he cut off on me?
I don't know.
All right. The last thing I said?
I don't remember.
You don't remember? Well, load it up.
Alright, here we go.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
crap! Operator, give me the number for 911.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Hello, everybody. You're listening to Mad Science live here. Well, by the time you hear this, I don't know, if you hear it like a day or two from now, you'll be hearing it not live. It'll be a podcast. Okay, that was real intelligent. Anyway, you're listening to Shaziz Radio. If you want to join in on the chat, jump over there to www.shazizradio.com/superchat.html. So what we've been talking about is pretty much a put-up-or-shut-up move. We're going to build a geodesic dome and start off with one 45-watt solar panel will be all the electricity that it starts with. We're going to make this a completely self-contained biosphere. It will be using no outside power grid whatsoever. Everything will be built on site as far as to if we need more power, we'll have to build something to run that extra deal.
So basically, according to the electric companies, it'll be completely and totally illegal.
Yeah, completely and totally off the grid.
They ain't putting any money in their pockets. How dare you live and not give us something?
Well,
yeah, you heathen.
Yeah, that's it. We're gonna have
dirty
to do
heathens.
It. Build this thing
on to your knowledge of the power circuits. You're living off grid. God, you might as well be living in a teepee, sleeping on hay.
Why not? Hey, if it's comfortable.
If there are kids in there, we're going to have to arrest you for child abuse. Because you're not hooked up to the grid.
Well, this is going to be our mad science lab / laboratory. So, you know, ain't going to be no kids living in this. It's going to be for experimental purposes.
And I don't know, man. It sounds like we'll be like kids in a candy shop.
Yeah. So,
it's funny you should say about a geodesic dome. Because last week I was in Tacloban in the Philippines visiting a friend of mine who's given them the opportunity to build an aquaponics system on their land.
Cool.
Now, if people aren't familiar with the location of the Philippines, it's kind of in that bit south of Japan but north of Malaysia. But they get about 20 typhoons a year, so you need a structure that's capable of resisting quite strong winds of up to 100 miles an hour, which a geodesic dome can manage.
Well, I think while you were talking about that in the aquaponics, it just I'm visualizing this thing come to light. I'd like to see like one dome, the big main dome would be for like you know, the laboratory where we do all of our experiments and our electrical power. And then the second dome would be for like a aquaponics / greenhouse kind of deal. You see what I'm saying?
With the redneck hot tub in the middle, of course.
Well, sure. Yeah. That way it's like, you know, you're taking a hot tub out there in the jungle, man.
the beauty of a geodesic dome is if it's built properly, there's no part of it that isn't going to get sunshine. There's not going to be... What they do recommend you do, though, is where the sun rises and the sun sets, one of the walls, you put a reflective material in to bounce the light back again, and it concentrates the sunlight.
Well, crazy as that sounds, I have probably about 6 to 10 rolls of Mylar that are reflective.
Now, if people are not familiar with Mylar, it's a material that has a refraction rate of anything up to 95%. So 95% of the light that hits the surface of good quality Mylar will be returned. So, whereas if you use plain tinfoil, that's about 10%.
So that could equally distribute the light from one side of the dome to the next one, you think?
Most certainly. I mean, I've actually used Mylar in some experiments, and I managed to dig up some of my old videos where I had a, I think it was a 48 watt T5 fluorescent strip. I was growing pumpkins, tomatoes, chilies, and I think it was two types of chilies there, bell peppers as well, indoors that had never seen the sunlight. And by the time they got to the point of planting out, I could put them out in my polytunnel in the middle of winter in the northern hemisphere, and they grew and they fruited.
Cool.
So it can be done, my friend.
When we build this first dome, I'm actually going to go build two. I'm going to start off with two domes. One for specifically gardening and one specifically for a laboratory. And so that covers two bases, actually three bases, because the one used for gardening we could also use for purification of water as well. What do you think?
Most certainly, yes. Well, anybody that's not familiar with aquaponics, it's very similar to hydroponics, except for instead of using artificial chemicals, you use the waste from fish, which natural bacteria breaks down into NO2 nitrogen, then to NO3 nitrogen, which is basically plant food. Now, to supplement the rest of the nutritious requirements of plants, there's roughly 16 different elements that you need. The three key elements being NPK, nitrogen, phosphate, and potassium. And the nitrogen is kind of the primary building blocks to make the plant grow, and the phosphate and potassium is for the flowering and fruit stage.
Some of what you mentioned, couldn't we get that out of wood ash?
Yeah, I mean, there's potash, there's all sorts of different sources of it. The more natural you can use, the better off you are. Bearing in mind you are working with live animals here, so you kind of have to be a little bit careful.
Yeah, but, yeah.
Basically, all of the waste from the fish gets pumped over a gravel bed or a sand bed or even a coconut fibre bed. You can even use the styrofoam if you really want to, although I'd kind of be a bit reluctant to do that because of some of the chemicals in it. That the plants filter out the toxins, all the waste from the fish, so it returns it back as mostly clean water.
Cool.
That's crazy. But you've got
mostly clean. Is that like Earth being mostly harmless?
Pretty much, yes. You'll never get it completely pure, but you'll certainly take out enough of the waste materials from the fish that when the water's returned, it's clean. They're clean enough for fish to survive in anyway.
All right.
Now your fish can take anywhere from 9 to 18 months to grow to the size that you could actually have a decent dinner off it. But you can turn vegetables over, things like lettuce, in a month.
Well,
crazy.
We could actually build a stream from the fish bed to the kitchen. That way the fish swim by and you nab him up and throw him on the griddle.
Well, I was talking to a young architect last week, and I was kind of impressing on them the idea of, why don't we have a geodesic dome big enough to maybe sit 30 or 40 people in a restaurant with a kitchen, and you've got like a plastic glass floor where the fish are swimming out around below you, and you have a hole in the middle of your table where you can drop down a fishing rod like an Eskimo hole.
That'd be cool.
You catch your fish and you wind it up and then you send it off to the kitchen and it comes back later all cooked for you.
That'd be cool.
You know, wouldn't that be fish and catch and fry?
Yeah.
A catch and fry restaurant. Now that's the new theme of, mad science catering.
That'd be awesome,
but
man.
If you brewed your own beer, if you grew your own vegetables, and you raised the fish in the same area and environment, now wouldn't that be something?
Yeah, I like it. Matter of fact, I love it. I guess I'm going to have to do a video called Dome Project, because that's what I'm going to do, is I'm going to build a dome.
Anybody out there that's listening that's wondering about geodesic domes, there are quite a few calculators out there. If you go and have a look on the internet, there's quite a few places where you can kind of put the size and angle of the dome that you want, and it'll automatically calculate it, whether it's like a 3, 4, 5, 6 kind of six-sided, what do they call it, pentagram.
Well, you're talking about it, whether it's 1, 2, 3, or four, up to what, 6 different lengths of board and where to put them?
Yeah, pretty much. And it'll calculate it, give you all the length, everything you could possibly need, and then you just cut the wood into the shapes you need. It tells you what angles they should be at. I mean, it's pretty cool. The geodesic domes have been around for a while, and there's some people that put some hard work into it, so they deserve a little bit of respect and credit for it. But yeah, it's kind of my pet project at the minute.
I think as far as building a structure, that's probably going to be the cheapest route, and in the long run, probably be the best route, is to build a dome like that. What do you think? So, go ahead.
The domes themselves, if you do get strong winds pushing against it, because it's a dome, all the weight is distributed to the base. So it doesn't matter which direction the wind's coming in, it's always going to push the dome down.
Yeah. And if it's if it's really anchored to the ground, then you ain't got to worry about the wind getting up underneath it like it does some of them tents we talked about.
Mm-hmm. And blowing it away.
Yeah.
I mean, back in the day when we were on different networks, I was looking at YouTube videos of guys in Canada in the middle of winter that were growing food in geodesic domes.
Well, I think, personally, I think it's brilliant because, you know, you could always add to it. If your lab, you start to outgrow your lab, you just build, pop up another dome right next to it and build a tunnel system to go to the from one to the other. And as far as heating it, you know, if you design from start to finish, you could actually do the couple separate different ways. One of circulating water through the floor and heating the floor, and the other would be for you to build an outside wood stove that you could actually pump that hot air up underneath the floor and have it come up out of the floor like a register. And then as far as people complaining about carbon emissions out of the doggone smokestack, we could capture the carbon and reuse that too. What do you think?
Mm-hmm. Most certainly. Now, I've just looked up the website that I was looking at a few years back for actually calculating your domes. It's called desertdomes.com. I'll drop that into the chat there, super chat, and she says radio, so people can have a look. But they're not really that difficult to build. It might take you a little while, but I mean, there's guys out there spending $50 on a bit of lumber, some sheets of plastic, and a staple gun, and that's it.
Cool.
Now, it's probably not going to withstand a particularly bad hammering, but at least, you know, it's got some value in it in itself. But it sounds like things coming on, Shazers, if you're kind of building your lab.
Yeah, I think that would be an awesome lab. Put that out there and. You know, I've had a lot of issues with my lab because of the structure that I got. It's an old building, and you know, it's got a little bit of flooding issues, and so I've had some problems with that doggone thing. And so, moving it into one of those domes to me would be awesome.
So you have a mad science lab full of Tesla coils in an incredibly damp and wet environment.
Yeah, it's not safe.
Well,
that's why I ain't been making a lot of videos from my lab, because it's just not usable at the moment, because it's like rain for 70 days and 70 nights over here. You know, it just won't stop raining, and every time it's
70 days and 70 nights, why aren't you drifting away in an arc?
I don't know. That was 40 days and 40 nights. We're past the arc situation. We waited
too
long.
Yeah, I know. About 30 days.
I don't know, it just seems like, every time you cut the grass, it rains, or every time you wash the car, it rains. So, a good rule of thumb is don't cut the grass and don't wash the car. And you'll live in the jungle and you'll have a filthy car.
Well, if you never do that, then that means basically if that's causing it to rain, then you're going to end up living in a desert, because you won't have to cut it, because it'll all die from dehydration.
Yeah, you'll have a drought.
Yeah.
So there's always a pros and cons to everything. Basically, it started off this this radio show today talking about those red line generators and other people working on motor generators. And I think that the biggest portion of why people are so negative about every doggone thing that you talk about as far as alternative energy, you know, is that they're not looking at it the right way. You know, like when you talk about losses in all the systems, you know, Lenz's law, the laws of thermodynamics and such, and friction and whatever, you're going to lose more than you get out or whatever. They're not understanding that when you push that generator, the harder you push that generator, the harder it's got to work and the harder you got to put energy into it. But if you take that same doggone generator, a 2,500 watt generator could run an astronomical amount of LED systems. There's your lighting. It's right out of the gate. You haven't used that much energy off that generator. The generator's not taxed hard to do it. And so if you had these red line generators and they were running off of battery banks and you could keep the battery banks stored up by solar panels, then you could run those LEDs 24/7 and never tax that red line generator. A red line generator is a 12 volt to 120 volt AC at 500 watts. So you got 500 watts of energy that you can use before you start taxing that thing to where it's drawing so much amperage that it's sucking them batteries down before they get a chance to completely charge up. And by using the proper batteries, instead of using like regular car batteries, using something like a deep cycle marine battery where you can drain them down to 20% of their full capacity before the load starts to slow down, I see no problem why you couldn't have that thing running 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, and never have to worry about it going dead. You know, and if all your lighting is covered, all right, there's one portion that you ain't got to worry about anymore. Now all you got to do is work on the heating and cooling portion of it, which there are other methods of doing that don't even take electricity, such as you take a 30-foot covert pipe and bury it 6 feet under the ground. The hot air from the outside gets drafted down in through the tunnel, and then it cools down underground, and then comes out the other side as cool air. There's a castle called Bosworth Castle, I believe is the name of it. It's up in Sedalia, Missouri, that they built this castle on top of an existing cave. And when the wind blows through that cave, it blows the cool air up from the cave up to the top of the building and then falls down through the all the different rooms and cools that deal. They don't use no electricity to do it. It's all natural, you know, what's the word I'm looking for, like convection or something?
I think you're talking about colonials using technology from the motherland.
Yeah.
Because the English have been banging away at that for centuries.
Yeah.
That's actually why you see a lot of these castles on the edge of a big cliff near the sea. Because they're limestone caves and the water comes up inside them. The air comes up inside them. But the problem is you do have problems with damp.
Well, in that case, you take and build the equivalence of a dehumidifier to take that damp air out of the air there. You know, a dehumidifier, for those folks out there that don't know what a dehumidifier is, you buy one of these things if you live in like a humid climate, and it will literally suck moisture out of the air. And if you don't dump that pan every so often, because the water will condensate and fill up in this pan, it'll spill out on your floor because it picks up a lot of water. Now, if you do that, then that'll take the dampness out of the air, and you can use that water right there as fresh water right out of the gate. And all it's doing is using a heat exchanger type system to literally pull moisture out of the air. So, using what Steve was talking about and what I was talking about at the same time together, now you ain't got that damp issue. You see what I mean?
Well, she says, I was out in the school in a rural part of Leyte province, east of Visayas, in near a city called Tacloban last week, and I was kind of quite impressed that they've got this barrel, maybe a 20 gallon barrel, about 15 feet in the air, and they use solar energy to heat the water to wash their dishes after their lunches.
Cool.
I mean, the sunshine there is brutal during the daytime. I mean, if you're there, you're going to sweat, whether you like it or not. But instead of using an electrical power supply to heat water to wash dishes with after the school lunches, one of the NGO groups just pitched up one day, built this framework, stuck a dirty great big barrel on the top of it, hot water.
Well, see, that's cool when you're talking about not using any electricity. There's also something else that could be done as well. You know, there's a deal called evaporative cooling. And essentially what happens is you run water down, and as the water's falling down and you blow air across there, it cools the air down. Anybody who's ever stood next to a waterfall knows it's always colder by the waterfall than it is anywhere else, because that water falling down creates cool air. Also could be static electricity potential involved there as well. But if you took and used some of the solar power to basically build you a hot section to where when water drips down on there, it's going to flash into steam. And then you guide that steam up when it gets up to a certain height away from where it's hot and begins to condense again, it'll fall down in the form of mist. And so you'll get an evaporative cooling out of that deal right there. So, you know, basically you could use every single thing that nature already does to cool, heat and cool the dome. You see what I mean?
Oh yeah, I mean that's the passive technologies have no moving parts.
Yeah.
Unless you're talking about falling water.
So if we're talking about lighting during the daytime, if you can't get light in your house, then you just don't know how to do it right. During the nighttime is the only time you'd actually need any batteries for lighting purposes. But even at that, you know, you'd have a backup system for a backup system. You know, like in my area, it's windy once in a while. Not windy all the time, so I could have some wind turbines up there to charge batteries when it is windy, solar panels when it's sunny, and, you know, even during the winter time, you know, you could supplement it with different things like, wood burning or whatever. You know, and basically you could heat water, you could cool the water back down, and use heat transfer systems to do everything from generate electricity to heating and cooling both, or heating your bath water or whatever. Even cooking.
Jesus, didn't we have a conversation a while back where if you can't get access to batteries, you can use capacitor banks?
Yeah, capacitor banks will work. And as far as building a capacitor, that's as simple as two plates. That's it. You know, aluminum foil, or aluminium, however you want to pronounce it.
Sorry, mate.
Aluminum foil and plastic, layered. There you go. A simple capacitor. It's that easy. And if you really want to get high tech and get you some glass, or, you know, we talked about melting glass. We may even actually be able to build our own capacitors out of 50-gallon drums by pouring in, a layer of aluminum shavings and a layer of sand, and basically heating that. If you use a steel drum to start, you'd have to figure out a way to peel it off when you're done. I don't know, there's all kinds of options, or, you know, just use them in their natural state. Either way, the separation between the glass, the sand, and so on, when you charge that thing up, it doesn't matter whether they're shavings or a solid plate, it's still going to hold a charge. You see what I mean?
Most certainly.
So,
I'm in the position now where I've actually got the opportunity to go and do something where people need help. And I kind of need a lot of help to find my way through. I can do it off grid.
I think that that's kind of. I live next to a foundry up here that basically they do aluminum casting. I think that I can get a whole bunch of aluminum dust where they grind that stuff off fairly cheap, if not even for free, because most generally they throw the stuff away, and because it. For parts purposes, when it gets like dirty or whatever, it's not quality parts anymore. You have to remelt it down and all that kind of stuff. But I think I could probably get some at the very least really cheap to build some capacitors to test out what I'm talking about. You see what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
So a layer of aluminum grind the ground up aluminum, and then a layer of plastic or glass, and then another layer of aluminum. Just keep layering it like that, and having a way to connect into each one of the layers individually, each one of the metal layers. You got a positive and negative plate, it'll hold a charge. And if a 50-gallon drum can't hold a lot of charge, then ain't nothing going to hold a charge. So,
isn't bismuth a byproduct of aluminium smelting?
I'm not sure. What about, do you know Thomas?
I'd have to look and see.
Remember we were talking about it before.
Yeah.
Well, bismuth has a very, very high resistance rate, though. So.
Well,
it's like a magnitude of 20 or 30 times more resistant than, say, copper. So, whereas aluminum and copper are pretty close to being the same resistance, and silver is like just slightly more less resistant than even copper.
If you can make
conductor, it's not very good. Bismuth's not a good conductor. So,
well, aluminum is. Maybe not the greatest, but it is. But if you could build your own capacitor, see, I've done several videos on using capacitors like batteries. I mean, you look through my videos, you'll see all kinds of them that I'm actually, like an LED. If you got an LED connected to a capacitor, that LED, when you charge that capacitor up, will run quite a long time, just as if it was a battery. See, now the problem with that type of energy is that the discharge rate, as far as like, let's say I got one fully charged and I put a screwdriver across the two contacts, pow, it's going to instantaneously discharge. But if it's already connected to that capacitor when you charge it up, then it's going to run just like a battery. You see what I mean? So there's a guy out there that took six of the new boost caps, supercapacitors, and he built a battery bank, and he was literally starting up a four-cylinder engine with it. And then after run for a while, the alternator would charge the deal up just like it was a battery, and he left it alone for 3 days, came back, and started up again. So we know that capacitors can be used as batteries, and you can build a capacitor out of trash pretty much.
Right.
So we built some massive battery banks, instead of having lead-acid batteries, build some massive capacitor banks and use those for storage. That'd be another plus for the dome, just to prove that it would work.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as far as charging, all you gotta have is a DC charge, and that's easy enough with a couple bridge rectifiers that you can get pretty doggone cheap, or build your own out of some diodes. So,
where's money when you need it?
Yeah.
I've had a few chats with Muddy about various designs of harnessing wind power, and he's got some pretty interesting ideas.
Well, I think that's what the key with the whole Dream Team idea was, to try to get all these guys together with ideas. But I think this particular idea that we're talking about, we can start off with a skeleton crew for as the Dream Team, and then when people see that it's actually you know, being productive, then maybe we can get more people to join on and speed the process up and just turn it into a big thing. What do you think?
Well, hopefully I'll be over to see you sometime in next year.
Well, by the time you get over there, we'll have the dome ready for you to start showing us what we did wrong with the aquaponics.
Well, it's not rocket science.
Well, everybody has their talents. Like, I'm obviously not a chef, so you wouldn't want me cooking for the rich and famous, because I'd probably get fired. And if you were my manager, you'd probably get fired too, because you picked me.
But, I mean, with fish, there's quite a few different types of fish that you can use. Tilapia is very fast growing. Jade perch isn't too bad. You can use slow cod. There's a whole range of different fish. I mean, they call it bangus locally is Milkfish. It's got a lot of bones in it though, so I'm not too particularly keen on it. But, you know, you do what you do. I mean, if you don't want to eat the fish, you can use koi carp, you can use goldfish, you can use grass carp. I mean, there's lots of different types of fish you can use.
Well, if you don't want to eat the fish, you could use the water, the same water. Let me back up a little bit. I had a friend one time that he was growing a garden, and every time he'd tell me he's going out to water the garden, he'd jump in his truck and he'd run down the pond. And I was like, why don't you just turn the water hose on? And he went into this long spiel about how stupid I was because do you really know what's inside that water? There's chlorine and fluoride and all this, and it just makes terrible plants, you know. But you go down there to the pond and you get the pond water, it's got so much nutrients in there, and water your pond with that, then you get, you know, good healthy plants out of the deal. And so,
you know, you,
with that aquaponics, you could grow vegetables in there and fruits and all that kind of stuff, and so you wouldn't even have to eat the fish, you just use the fish to help you fertilize your plants. What do you think?
Depending on how many fish you have, depends on how many plants you have.
Yeah.
Because you can't have one or the other. You have to have both.
Yeah.
Because if you ain't got the plants, you're not filtering the water. If you ain't got the fish, you're not providing the nutrients.
Well, that's why you would have both. You just wouldn't be eating the fish. You just, you know, whoever likes fish eats fish. Whoever don't.
Yeah. But part of the problem is trying to gauge how many litres of water you've got compared to how many litres of growth space you've got.
Yeah.
Now you can usually get away with about 1:1, 2:1, or even 3:1 in some of the bigger systems. But you have to keep growing stuff. That's the problem. But to be honest, it's not unhealthy to eat fresh, clean vegetables that haven't come from a fluoride water source.
Yeah, what I'd like to see though is that once this thing was set up, that you could almost literally walk away from it and it would be self-contained, kind of like that jar that I was talking about. They got this thing called bottle gardening, and
yeah.
So essentially, once you got this thing set up, you could it would almost be self contained to where, you know, it just regulates itself. You see what I mean? I'm trying to.
Well, I went down to the local fast food place and I got their mayonnaise tubs, and they were 10 litre tubs. And there's bucket gardening as well, because water would be self-leveling as long as you've got like a siphon going from one to the next to the next to the next.
Yeah.
And generally, if you've got it set up right and your water level is above where your pipes are that connect from one to the next, you just fill the first bucket up and the whole lot will level itself out. So you don't even have to go and water every single bucket. It's brilliant stuff if you can get it worked out.
Well, yeah, what you're talking about, I was doing that a while back in the pond, and I actually used the level of the pond, but there was a problem because we were coming into like a drought time where the pond level kept going down, and I had to keep moving my buckets out, and then if it poured down raining, the pond would fill back up and flood my buckets. But if you did it on almost like an aquaponics type system, like you said, the water will find its own level. Well, you could have one container down there that had nothing but water in it, had no dirt or anything like that, just nothing but water, and you'd have a float in there. Whenever the float got low to the water level that you wanted, it automatically kicked the water valve on and be self-watering. What do you think?
Well, you can actually float rafts on top of your deep water culture system and grow plants directly in it.
Yeah.
It's only if you're using like a substrate media that you need to pump water over to have it to return back to the tank. But if you put your plant directly on top of a deep water system, and it probably wouldn't need to be more than about 3 feet deep, the roots for things like tomatoes, lettuce, can actually dangle directly in the water and take the nutrients out of it, so you don't even need a pump in some systems.
Yeah, and basically around here, as far as much as it rains, the system that I was talking about for as far as bucket gardening, you never have to worry about your buckets getting waterlogged because it would be self-draining and self-filling, you know. Whenever the rainwater wasn't out there, it'd have an alternate gravity-fed water system, where the float valve would turn it on and off and keep it continuously watered.
Well, you know, you can actually hang tomato plants upside down in a bucket.
Yeah.
So basically what you do is you get a bucket, you poke a hole in the bottom of it, you take your young tomato plant with soil, drop that through the hole, and as it grows, if you've got that hanging somewhere where water's going to go into the top of the bucket, you don't even have to water it yourself.
Yeah, and that's also brilliant because they got like tomato cages that you normally put on your tomato plants because they get so heavy they'll fall over and break off. That dangling down there, it's a, you know, I think would be a lot better on the plant, wouldn't you?
Well, the beauty of that as well is if you've got a problem with slugs, snails, pesties and beasties, then the ones that are creepy crawly on the floor are not likely to climb up.
Yeah.
Whatever structure you've got it hanging over, so you don't end up getting tons of slugs. I hate slugs.
They're not starting out on the plant, therefore wanting to keep going because they're already on the plant. They have to climb over something that's not really conducive to their. Be like basically you being able to start out right there on top of the cow to get yourself a slab of. Slab of steak or a hamburger as opposed to having to walk over a hot bed of coals to get to it.
Well, yeah, if you put like a salt lick around that doggone bucket.
There you go. Yeah, you're an eating person, should they, aren't
you? Yeah, those slugs ain't going to go nowhere near that.
Actually, yeah. What I'm thinking is if you take that bucket and instead of putting a hole in the bottom of it, you just go ahead and set it up so that basically there's a lid. You put the lid on it with a hole in that, with the plant coming up through it, and then you mount that on a wheel facing out from the wheel or in from the wheel, I guess. Then you could basically put a light source in the middle and rotate that wheel slowly around for the first couple months of its life, and you'll get like a year's worth of growth in just 2 or 3 months.
Oh yeah.
Well, not to mention the stalk is going to be way, way thicker from constantly flexing back and forth as it's being, you know, rotated against the angle of gravity that it was previously at as it goes around that wheel.
Well, I'm excited about this project.
Tomato trees.
Well, one of the other tricks you can do as well is if you get a large container of maybe 30 or 40 litres, you can poke holes in the side of it and grow strawberry plants, herbs, tomato plants, anything you want to, out of the side of the bucket. Yeah, so you've literally got a 365-degree grow area, and that's probably around about the equivalent of 6 square feet of flat land. So this is the whole concept of that. I mean, some people use a bit of a 4-inch waste pipe.
What if you do this? Well, you've seen a 30-gallon tank, right?
Oh yeah,
I mean a 30-gallon drum. Take a 55-gallon drum and a 30-gallon drum and stick the smaller one inside of it and poke holes in it facing inward and the holes in the 5-gallon drum facing outward. So that way you've actually got double the amount of space, and then you can use the inside to hold the water. You can put as much water as you want on the bottom. And then
what you put on the inside is potatoes. See, with that cavity that you've got between the 30-gallon drum and the 55-gallon drum, you fill that with soil, you put plants in the side, and then you put potatoes in the middle.
Cool.
Because every time your leaves come up, you put more soil on top of the leaves, and the leaves will grow up again through it, and you'll produce more potatoes. You can do it in...
What about the plants that are sticking out the inside of the 30-gallon drum that will finally grow inward? That's what I was thinking. It's just basically being able... Right, if you're going to grow potatoes, you could basically do what you were talking about, where basically... you just use the inside barrel in order to have more room to grow more stuff. But I'm talking about, like, so you can literally grow them inward and outward, and you double your space.
Well, what you can do on top of that is you can use a wick. So you have a pool of water in the bottom. Well, it'll always drain through the soil. Gravity will always pull water down. So you have a reservoir in the bottom, literally with something like a T-shirt or a beaver cloth that goes up through the center of the soil. And that will bring the water up through the wicking process and water the whole thing for you.
Cool.
You have a little overflow pipe as well, so you know exactly what height you want your reservoir to be. And the way I used to do that was to put one bucket inside another bucket, because they never fit all the way in, because most buckets taper. So you're going to have about 4 inches of the bomb, and if it does fall down, then you stick a brick in there or whatever, just to keep it at a certain height. It's pretty easy to do. It's complicated.
Well, and also in this this scenario we're talking about, growing food and everything like that, there's a lot of water filtration systems that I don't know if you guys ever seen one of them 50-gallon drums where they put a layer of carbon and so on down with gravel and sand and all that, and then they basically filter the water just like nature would already filter it. So we could actually capture rainwater right straight off the dirt, you know, and filter that down through there for if there's any impurities in the air or whatever, and then that water would be transferred down into literally drinking water after it was all said and done. What do you think of that idea?
Making sure that you get all the microbacteria out as well is probably an interesting thing.
Yeah. Well, there's all kinds of different ways, UV light and stuff like that, and it's just an unlimited amount of information that you have access to out here on the internet. And so basically what we're talking about here today, and we're getting down to the wire of it, but is essentially taking and using your generating systems most efficiently, to using everything that nature does efficiently. And so I guess that's the Dome Project is what I think I'll call it. And I'll try to do a video up here and get that up on and tell everybody about it. And I'll get the ball started by building the domes. And then from that point on, if anybody wants to join in and help out, then we'll do it. What do you think?
Well, Shazit, you know you can actually build the domes out of bamboo as well.
Well, does anybody live in an area where they have access to a lot of bamboo that could ship it out? I heard that over here in the States, Muddy said they grow bamboo in his area.
You can grow it pretty much anywhere where there's a right sort of environment.
It's an invasive species once it shows up. People literally pay others to come and trim it back and get rid of it because it's so hard to keep from spreading into areas you don't want it. Like, it'll literally, you start it in the corner of your yard, and before you know it, the whole yard will be overgrown because it sends out rhizomes through the soil and grows more stalks and just keeps spreading. Well, so anybody that's got it should have more than an excess. You want the stuff, though, that's got the branches with lots of little leaves sticking off of it, not the stuff that basically just looks like giant grass.
Yeah.
The stuff that just looks like giant grass is just basically real soft, and it's more like balsa wood than it is actual wood. The stuff I'm talking about, that stuff is rigid. I mean, the only way you can get better than that is to get rattan, which doesn't have a hollow core. It's solid, and it's still, you know, just as dense all the way through.
Well, expense-wise, how do you think that would compare to 2x4s?
I'm not sure. Connectors. Yeah, the connectors are the problem, I would be thinking, is the expense. I mean, is it going to cost more to come up with a connection system to put those together than 2x4s cost? Because the connectors for 2x4s, you can literally make them out of like the tops of old VCRs and whatnot, taking that sheet metal. I sent you some links for the images of how those things are made, how simple and easy they are. You literally are just cutting a disc, cut slits in from the outside of the disc toward the middle, fold the edges over, and then you can pop 3 holes, or 4 holes, or 6 holes, depending on how big the sheet is, and bend those down over the angle that the wood struts are going in your geodesic dome, and put a screw through each of those, or a nail through each of those. I would use screws.
Yeah.
I'm just a screw person. I like using nails.
All right. Well, brilliant. That's we got to wrap this up. But either way, I hope everybody gets a chance to join on the Knights of the Round Table tomorrow. You've been listening to Mad Science. I'll try to get a video out here the next day and tell everybody what the idea, the plan is, and see who wants to get involved. And my preference is to do this all with recycled materials, so that number one, cuts the expense down, number two, empties the dump out a little bit, and you know, basically shows everybody what you can do if you really want. So
what would be nice is if we could literally start making, like, grinding up and making our own PLA plastics or something out of bamboo.
Yeah.
And we could use a 3D printer to print the connectors to connect the bamboo struts together to make the geodesic dome.
That'd be cool. Well, anyway, folks, we got to run, but you've been listening to Mad Science. Look, if you can't find free energy, you're simply not looking hard enough for it, and we're going to prove it by doing this one project. And we're going to throw some other projects in there, but actually going to build, I'm going to build a lab in this, in the shape of a dome, and start off, and it's going to be self-powered from start to finish. And if I need more power, then I'll build something that will give me more power for whatever it is I need. Build my own battery banks and capacitor banks and so on. So with that said, you guys got anything last to squeak in there?
Bamboo is one of the fastest growing biomasses on the planet and can grow up to an inch a day. They still use it today in Japan to build skyscrapers with.
Cool.
I don't think it grows faster than kudzu, but there's no way you can build a building out of kudzu.
Well, I don't necessarily know that. That's, I want to start growing it out here.
Excellent.
Because you said it's invasive.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, is if you basically just don't let it get out of hand, so that it takes so much work to cut it all out of the ground, but you got to cut it out of the ground to keep it from coming back. Otherwise,
yeah.
If you cut it down to the ground, it'll just grow right back. But what you were talking about before of using PVC to make those structures, the bamboo would be a better choice to use for that.
Cool.
I have been thinking about that for some time, so, and I know plenty of places, it, almost everywhere you go, as long as they have cables and whatnot they put on the ground, you can get this nylon rope that's a flat ribbon that they use for pulling cables and stuff through. They toss that stuff out, and you can use that to wrap two of the skinny ends of the two bamboo stalks together, so that, you know, basically they're the same diameter all the way through. It's just you got two pieces in the middle to make up for the lack of, you know, how thick they are compared to the ends.
Yeah.
And then arch that over, bend it down, and boom, you've got your arch.
All right.
To start building your structure. So.
All right, cool. We gotta go. Everybody.
We're gonna do it. That's all I'm gonna say.
Yep, I'm on it. Peace and love, everybody. You've been listening to Mad Science. Take care.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.